At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you. Most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're continuing our draft countdown shows today with the edge position, one the Ravens certainly have a need at. And joining me to talk about that group is Josh Reed. Josh, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Ken. Thank you for having me on this Easter Sunday for me, probably Monday for you.
There we go. So Josh lives in Alaska, if you haven't heard this before, but he's been on about 20 times. We always record at about 2:30 a.m. Eastern because he can get his kids to sleep by about then, and it's the easiest time for him to record. And I do appreciate it, and I'm a night owl, so we won't have any problem going through this, but we might be recording here for a while because it's an interesting edge class. I think it is not particularly top-heavy. There's no Will Anderson in this class, but there are a fair number of prospects that will probably go in the top 100 picks, maybe the top 80, and possibly as many as 10, maybe 11 guys who could go in the top 100. How do you feel about it?
Yeah. I kind of echo similar sentiments. Not deep. I mean, not top heavy, but kind of deep in the sense that, like, you know, it's kind of a pick your poison, but like, all right, just a little bit of everything for everybody here in this draft class. If you're looking for more of a power rusher, they got those guys. If you're looking for more speed guys, they got those guys. If you're looking for more, some hybrid guys, plenty of those guys. So it's pretty nice, well-rounded class, if you ask me.
Yeah. Some nice run defenders as well. There's every year, there's a bunch of people that will be missing a name, for example, and I'll probably go through these at the end of the show anyway. The likelihood is the guy is probably a five tech who's grouped with edges in other things. And I'm pretty picky in particular because the Ravens play a 3-4 scheme. My lists are made for the Ravens. They're not paying me to make a list or anything, but I'm making a list as if I were drafting for the Ravens, and I'm drafting guys who fit a 3-4 scheme. So some of these guys maybe could work as a 4-3 end, and some of them are just misplaced and really belong as a 5 tech. Of course, it's kind of the death knell to be pegged as a 5 tech because the position is kind of dying, in my opinion, in the NFL. And, you know, we like what Brent Urban has done for the Ravens and what some other players have. But if you're not a 3-5 at this point in the NFL, a very limited role because the base defense is not on the field very often.
Yeah, really, you really like those tweeners are really in style now. Guys like this is Darius Smith who can play inside outside the Pernell McPhees of old. You know, those guys who have that kind of versatility to be able to bump outside as well as play inside, rush over guards, are really becoming more of a premium now. And if you're a guy who just plays exclusively inside, you know, like, unless you're a three tech or, you know, in dominating at that three tech spot, it's gonna, you say, like you say, you're gonna kind of phase out of the game a little bit.
Kind of interesting, the last 2 years with McDonald, very little in terms of interior pass rush from outside linebackers. They did some of it, but it's very minimal compared to what it was with Martindale, who ran all these race car packages, which were four outside linebackers on the field at once, and a whole lot of rush nickel, I call it, with three outside linebackers. That's with one outside linebacker kicked inside, generally speaking. Can be off the line of scrimmage too, but this class, you know, offers what I think the Ravens have a need for. They've been remarkably successful in recent years going to the bargain bin and finding guys.
Yeah, you know, like two guys that just, you know, just came off of career years and they're in their 10th years in the league, over 30 years old, and Jadeveon Clowney and Kyle Van Noy. And just seeing the deal that Clowney got, it's like there was no way the Ravens going to be able to match that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and honestly, why would you want them to? You know, given what DaCosta has been able to show that he's able to do as far as these bargain bin options. I know you're not always going to have two home runs and like you did last year, but I have faith that he'll have at least one, maybe not a home run, but maybe, you know, hit a double there. You know, maybe you can bring a guy like Kyle Van Noy back, who's even old, even though both him and Clowney came into the league at the same time. Kyle Van Noy is even older at 33 years old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're Van Noy, I think, would be a great addition just because he's a Sam linebacker, which is something the Ravens would be looking for in this draft, too, by the way. And I'm looking for Sam traits can be difficult. I know you've heard me probably report on this before, but most of the guys who are good pass rushers who are at the top of everybody's edge lists are not really identified as Sams in college because their college teams need them to rush the passer so much. Mm-hmm. And they often will line up opposite the naked tackle just because they're a particularly potent pass rusher. So that's your rush linebacker is the one who does that. The guy who lines up opposite the tight end might be another player you trust to cover, and you maybe don't think as much of him as a pass rusher. And those guys aren't on anybody's draft boards, but you got to look for traits. You got to find the guys who've had some coverage snaps in their career. And there's a fair number of those in this draft. And so I think it's an interesting kind of, to have four or five guys you could choose from who I think would be really legitimately good Sam options in this draft. Whereas I think the year Odafe Oweh came out, a very limited number of players who really fit that mold or obviously fit that mold, let's say. And it's interesting. I think they have more this year.
Yeah. I mean, it's just it's kind of rare to see a class with that particular skill set, just because like you were saying, a lot of the college defenses are, I mean, outside of Michigan, are really simplified as far as you get your best guy who's hand in the dirt or lining up outside. So to find guys like those at that specific position, especially now that they didn't have Tyus Bowser all of last year, and it didn't really hurt them. But that's still a skill set that this defense in particular likes to have, you know, available to them dating back to as far as Rex Ryan and so days.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, certainly whether it was Adalys Thomas or whether it's been Bowser or Judon, the Ravens have really benefited in terms of flexibility from the pass rush by being able to drop an outside linebacker. And in particular, when they had Judon and Bowser on the team at the same time, that was an embarrassment of riches, frankly. David Ajabo, obviously a player who's got a really murky future at this point, I think, with the Ravens. But I don't want to damn the guy as being done at this point. But I will say that both his floor and his ceiling on a prospective basis are lower than they were at the start of 2023.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't go as far as some people have online to call him Sergio Kendall 2.0. but because, you know, the guy has just kind of had a, you know, crap luck when it comes to the on a whole injury front. Like I said, when he's been on the field, he's been impactful. He just hasn't been on the field. Mm-hmm. And so the biggest thing for him is just, like I said, getting healthy and staying healthy. And all we can do at this point is kind of cross our fingers. You know, there was so much hype surrounding this guy heading into his second year, even though this is a guy who basically missed all of his rookie year, and he was getting touted as a potential dark horse for be a Pro Bowler this time last year. And I just think some of the expectations were a little too lofty for him. Mm-hmm. heading into the second season, given how little he played as a rookie. So I just feel like, you know, given that lackluster preseason he had, because like I was expecting a lot more from him, honestly, in a preseason, and the fact that they played him as long as they did in some of those games, and he still wasn't having an impact against second and third string tackles who aren't even in the league, was a little bit concerning to me. So like I said, it's all about for him. It's all about development and health this offseason.
Yeah, very much. I hope there's positional coaching going on as well as just rehabbing, because you got to have a mix of both. But that positional coaching for players like him, very important. You know, I this is not an excuse for him. This is a reason why he needs the coaching, is he still has not played a whole lot of football in his life.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the thing about those guys who are late to the game sometimes. Oh yeah, it's all this immense talent, but at the same time, do we really have time to try to cultivate all that talent on top of them being hurt? So when you have a guy who's really raw and who's not available for you to refine that clay, it kind of becomes a bit of a mess. And I won't say a waste of a pick, but you're already 2 years into this contract, and this is still a guy who's still pretty raw and still struggling to stay on the field. So it's like, to no fault of his own, it's not he asked to pop his Achilles at his pro day or had to have that knee injury this past season, but it's just like an unfortunate situation for him to where this has really delayed his already delayed growth.
Yes, And it is unfortunate. Ajabo remains kind of a lottery ticket for the Ravens. If it works out, great. I don't think the Ravens are betting on it working out at this point. Owe is certainly the pillar of the group, and I think he can pretty much do it all. I'm very bullish on Adafe Owe. I think he's a good pass rusher, gives you a lot of first pressures, and he's a good run defender as well. But the other thing that's really important on this team is they have Harrison and Robinson as a pairing for rotational early down snaps against the run, have provided reasonably good run defense in particular. I think Harrison in that regard, and Robinson may, you know, be an upgrade as a pass rusher at some point along the line. The good, nice thing about him is he got a fair number of snaps in his rookie season, and not everybody does that. A lot of players, in particular edge guys, can end up inactive for a lot of weeks because they don't always play even on special teams. Paul Kruger comes to mind as a guy who really had to wait his turn quite some time because of that.
Yeah, and I think, like you were saying, I think Tavius really benefited from getting those early snaps while some of the guys were, like, Adafe was banged up and Ajabo was lost for the season early on in the year. And a guy like that, you could really see him shot, especially on early downs as an edge center. I mean, I think make it my favorite play of his this past year. It wasn't even his first career sack. It was that play he had against Tyreek Hill in week, 16, 17, where you think, oh, there's no way this guy's going to be able to keep Tyreek Hill from getting around the edge, and he did. And so those are kind of plays I'd like to see. I could feel like projecting him to next year, as like even if he's you might even see him start more games than somebody who plays more snaps than him, just because he's going to be the early down defender guy, that edge center guy.
Yeah, I mean that's exactly what I'd expect, because they do use that base defense a lot on first down, and he and Harrison are quite often out there to start the game. All right. Well, let's get right into it. We'll jump in. We do, as folks remember, I'm sure, a 10-to-1 countdown for each one. So we have two separate lists. Josh, do you want to talk at all about how you built your list? I mentioned that, you know, mine is Ravens centric. It's you know, how can these guys come in and help a Ravens 3-4 unit with guys who can either play the same position they did in college or maybe adapt to playing an outside linebacker role?
Yeah. So I kind of did a similar. I always, whenever I do these things, because I write about the Ravens, I always kind of do these things through a Ravens centric lens. And so, like, even though I have guys, like, we're going to get into some of the top guys on, like, I don't even consider them in the Ravens range as far as draftable. It's not exercise we're doing. You know, we're doing which guys kind of fit the Ravens. So yes, I do have Dallas Turner on my list fairly high up, but, you know, just because of the fact that he's not going to be anywhere near the Ravens draft range doesn't mean I'm not going to talk about the guy. So we're just, right, like I said, that's how I kind of tiered my list to a Ravens centric lens, as far as things that they could use, things that they need, you know, just because, you know, you have a guy at a position that you may not necessarily at a different, like, they have plenty of rush guys. You know, they don't have enough Sams. That doesn't mean I'm not going to break down any of the rush guys.
Right. And same thing with me too. I went through what I consider to be all the top prospects, threw out some five tech guys, included all the other edge guys, including guys that are 4-3 ends and probably wouldn't even do particularly well as an outside linebacker, still included them in terms of some of this. But I hope we'll have some fun with this. And why don't we go ahead and start with your number 10 guy?
Okay, get my list here. My number 10 guy is Adisa Isaac from Penn State. He's a guy that 14 half career sacks. Unlike a lot of the Penn State guys to come out of the draft, not only is he athletic, he actually had some college production too. Unlike a guy that we're going to talk about a little later here, I actually called him the Batman to Chop Robinson's Nightwing. I don't know if people feel familiar with the Batman comics, but, you know, there's Batman and Robin, but Robin goes up to become Nightwing. So I still consider Chop Robinson a guy who's still really raw. He's not quite Batman, but he's on his way there. So I consider Adisa Isaac was a little bit more refined than Chop Robinson, was more productive than him. And, like, he was really kind of the captain of that defense for the Nittany Lions last year, led the team with 7.5 sacks. And he's a guy I really liked coming out. Thoughts on him?
Okay, well, I have Isaac higher on my board. I have him at number 6 overall, so I really liked him. Balanced defender, does a lot of things well, 6'4", 247. Nice long arms. That's very important for edge rushers, and tackles have long arms. You're playing to dictate first contact, and even when you're playing half the man and you have some of the advantages of one arm's longer than two, playing, you know, with one arm or chopping or doing the other things you can do to it to an offensive tackle still really helps to be able to initiate that first contact before he can get his hands on you, that tackle. Good, outstanding test for explosiveness in terms of the jump. 4.7, 4.40 is very good for an edge. By the way, you don't see a lot of guys that low. And I know we're spoiled because we've got Adafi Owe and he ran in the 4.3s. But there isn't anybody in this draft, I don't believe, any lower than 4.46, 4.48 in that range. I'm trying to remember who I don't think anybody's below that anyway. I thought when you look at Isaac as a run defender, I think he did a good job turning the shoulder of the tackle. And it kind of folds the outside of the run play, forces that play to the inside fairly well. I like that. He's not as effective at his size, really, when the tackle squares up on him. So he's got to, in a sense, look to penetrate, look to anticipate, play one side of the man, and try and get to the ball. There's other guys who are much longer who are good at denying space. He's always going to be a guy, hopefully, who can make tackles himself, will make plays for himself by being a little bit of a penetrator there. He's got his hands and he's got his length. They're both pretty good to try and win with, but he really needs to win with that because he's not going to win on size. I don't think he's going to be a particularly good bull rusher at the NFL level. Do you have a feeling about that?
None. So I'd put that he needs to develop more pass rush moves because he kind of it's I wouldn't say he's a one trick pony now, but he doesn't have a repertoire. It's more like a couple moves that he tries, and if he doesn't get it with those, he kind of just like, all right, I'm just going to try to win with hustle then.
Looking for Sam characteristics. This isn't a guy with obvious Sam characteristics, but the 40 is not bad. He is lined up some against tight ends in coverage, dropped to coverage 11.7% of the time. In college, solid results on that 6.5 yards per target. So he's a guy, you know, the you have to go a fairly long way between snaps when you're watching a single Penn State guy to even watch him drop to coverage. So there may be, you know, 40 pass plays by the opponent and then four of them, he's going to drop to coverage. So you have go a long way between reps. So I depend in terms of coverage stats in particular, on going and seeing what yards per target had been like and some of the other advanced metrics there. But the percentage of total drops of coverage is something you'll often see heard. Did not really see great anticipation on screen passes. And that's something you'd really like to see out of Isaac at a higher level. His height, you know, doesn't lend itself to necessarily a ton of batted passes at 6'4". It doesn't have bad height, but he's not extraordinary. You know, there's 6'5", 6'6" guys. You know, there's Dunlaps and people out there who that's their game. But the one thing I would have hoped he would do is do a little bit more anticipation of screen plays and get some batted passes there. He had one his entire college career, so that was kind of a negative for me.
Yeah, you definitely want to see those guys because, like, there are going to be times where you're not going to be able to get home. You know, if you can't get home, get your hands up. You know, that's kind of what they tell you. And your first day of training camp, you know, you guys, you're not always going to be able to get there. The ball comes out a lot faster at the next level. So you're going to have to, I'm pretty sure Chuck Smith is going to definitely coach him up on some of those in addition to his pass rush moves.
You know, that is one of the great things about Adisa Isaac because he's been successful without being a really polished pass rush repertoire. That's going to come up over and over again tonight as we talk about these guys. There's a lot of guys with high polish, and I look at them with kind of a jaundiced eye. I have a real questions about how much more of a ceiling they have at the NFL level. One big one high up on the boards is about the most polished pass rusher in college you will ever see. And I know a lot of people love him. I just love him a little bit less. I'll tell you that in advance to tease that out. But anyway, I had Isaac a little bit higher than you, but glad to see you had him on your list as well.
Second round. Wasn't that I was like, you know, down on him. It's just I have this cluster of guys, and like when I was putting together my list, I was like, oh yeah, I like that guy. So it wasn't like I think Isaac is worse than some of the guys I have higher up on my board. It was just as I was making my list, he just happened to be number 10.
All right, very cool. We'll go to my number 10 guy who's second, and that is Braylon Trice out of Washington. So we saw make sure I get to my notes here. We saw a lot of him, of course, in the postseason. He was Trice is a guy who has a lot of pressures, but a relatively low sack total for those pressures. So he's more like Adafe Owe as a pass rusher. Now, what's the significance of that? Pressures are the stable statistic. So that's something, the pressures are more likely to duplicate themselves. It's actually a fear at the NFL level for Justin Matabike that he doesn't really have the pyramid base of pressures to go with that very high sack total that he had last year. So he's really, you know, he's dependent on other people to create opportunities for him. The first pressure guys will get their sacks in time, and Braylon Trice is that guy. So that's why I really liked him on the list. I think he'll be fine at the NFL level. Got short arms. That's a negative, and it's one of the reasons why he's as low as 10 on my list. I'd probably have him higher otherwise. Kind of a little bit of an odd physical build to be 6'4", 245, and have real short arms. What else do I want to say about him? 4.72 40 is more than adequate. He only had one forced fumble in 18 college sacks. I consider that a negative. Of course, Will Anderson was fine last year, and I think he had one out of 34. I mean, just freakish that he would only get one forced fumble in all those. That's a choice he's making at that point. If the Ravens are looking pass rusher, Trice is a guy I think the end of the second round maybe would be a place where the Ravens could realistically still have a shot at him. If he gets to the end of the third round, then I think they there's no way they don't pull the trigger on a player like that. I mean, obviously it depends on who else is available as well, but I would think he'd be a tremendous value in round three.
Yeah, yeah. Braylon Trice, that chick I had a little bit higher on my list just because he just seems like a Ravens guy to me as far as with all the things that that Washington asked him to do, especially this past year. I think he even dropped in the coverage a fair amount, but he made a lot of plays in the backfield, seven sacks, 11 and a half tackles for loss. And they said that pressure number is one that I circled too, because the Ravens, and they even, like Eric Costa even said it word of mouth.
Yeah.
I mean, he said that the ways that they value always so much is that they believe more in pressures than they do in sacks. And Braylon Trice is a guy who may not ever be a double-digit sack guy, but he's definitely going to be a double-digit pressure guy year in and year out. And he's going to be a solid pro. He may not ever make a career Pro Bowl, but he's definitely going to be a consistent disruptive force off the edge.
This is one of the other things that got me about him was he's got 925 snaps in 2023. That is more than an NFL workload in the edge. In fact, you know, with guys like Owe, you'd really only want them to play about two-thirds of the set of the snaps, which at the NFL level might be about 700 during the regular season or a little bit more, maybe 750. But still, I mean, he's played more than a full season. This is a guy who might be just fine with the rookie wall. And he's going to be playing against bigger men, more developed and whatnot. It's going to be a challenge for him to move up. But the Ravens are also going to move him way down in terms of snaps. So if he plays... Let's see, if he were to play half the snaps as a rookie, and that would be, he would be doing something really special if he did that in the Ravens defense and played half the snaps, because they don't give rookies that much of an opportunity early on. And I think he could probably be fine for the whole season given the workload he was given at Washington.
Yeah, that's just what I was alluding to. Given everything they asked him to do, and think whenever, because I watched a lot of Washington last year, because there's a guy from Alaska on that team that was on that team who's going to get drafted this year. So I was watching a lot of Washington tape this past year, and whenever they needed a big play, Braylon Trice. Whenever needed to stop, Braylon Trice was the guy that they turned to for that play, and he's a guy that I just like, and he's like, you know, typical Ravens character guy too, you know, team captain, senior leader, all that kind of stuff, special teams background, all that good jazz. And I think he tried to he dropped a lot of weight for the combine because he was trying to improve his athletic testing. Yep. But athleticism was never really the name of his game, so he kind of hurt himself in a sense, because like coming in prior to the combine, I was thinking him being projected to the Ravens in the bottom of the first round, which I thought was a little too rich for my taste. But because of the season that he just had playing for a national finals team, he had all the hype, but then after he had that kind of lackluster performance at the combine, I think right bottom of the second round would be like right where I feel like he should go, and where the Ravens might try to scoop him up.
And the Ravens, if they trade down, they could have some they could have a pick early in round three if they trade down. Now, of course, it's also possibly they end up with a 20 additional 25 pick. This is a year I really believe the Ravens will not try and reset their draft excessively this year. Meaning, I think they won't want to trade for 2025 draft capital with 2024 draft capital. They just have too many holes to fill.
Yeah.
It's you know, I just, most years I'm fine with it. I'm fine if they want to, you know, trade a first for a first and for a second this year and a first next year kind of thing. Most years I'm fine with that kind of a trade. Not this year.
Last year, like, they were fine doing the whole developmental thing. I mean, if you really think about it, every one of their picks outside of Zay Flowers was kind of a developmental pick from Trenton Simpson all the way down to Andrew Voorhees, who basically medically redshirted. They don't have that luxury this year. They had too many guys walk out the door in free agency or who they traded away to where they need these draft picks to maybe not necessarily be starters right away, but key contributors, rotational pieces right away.
I mean, they need to make the roster. There need to be a reason why they're on the roster. They need to be active on game days, most of them. There will be some guys that, you know, the fifth corner, if they have a developmental guy, or the sixth corner, that's fine. The sixth wide receiver, no problem. I understand why that guy's not active every week. But they're basic guys. If they draft an edge and they Krugerize him and he can't get on the field for 8 weeks or whatever it was, I'd be really upset by that. I wouldn't think that'd be a good use of the play, because they've already got developmental guys at this position in particular.
Yeah, Malik Cam and Davis Robinson.
Oh, and Malik Cam too. Yep. We keep forgetting about him. And there's a Sam opportunity, by the way. That's a potential Sam guy. All right. So Trace is my number 10. Trace is my number 10 guy. Who's your number 9 guy?
My number 9 guy, he's a guy who didn't have a lot of college experience, but his last year he really blew up, and he's really kind of been killing it this pre-draft process. It's Austin Booker from Kansas. He's a long, lanky guy, but I remember this guy's been in the league for a while. When I was looking at Max Crosby coming out of Eastern Michigan, and he was a guy who played a lot more than Booker did in college, but as far as the body type, and he doesn't necessarily fit with the Ravens at the Ravens 3-4 defense, but just of what he can do from an athleticism standpoint and what he showed in that 1 year at Kansas, I think he's a guy who, like, you know, like, fit or not, he's a pass rusher. He's a guy that with the kind of length and explosiveness that can make it, that the Ravens could find a way to use a guy like this.
So I had a couple of problems with Booker. I still have him in my honorable mention list, but basically here are the reasons why I couldn't include him in the top 10. Number one, and this is really serious, I can't find an accurate birthday on the guy. Okay, now I've looked around, I've Googled it, I've looked at various sites, I've looked in the media guide. There's not an accurate birth date on him. There's not a birth date on him. And I know there's one of the guides that's really good about getting accurate birth dates. It's the one, the Beast has it. I just don't have it.
Dane Brugler? He's the Beast, yeah.
Yeah, so it'd be nice to know what Austin Booker's age is. And then I latched right on exactly what you said. He's got 505 college snaps between Minnesota and Kansas career. That's very, very little football played. And let's say the guy's also 23 and a half right now. And I don't know, but I'd be concerned about that given there's no birthday. Because if you're a 21-year-old who's just about to turn 22 – you want your age out there. You don't screw around. You put that everywhere you can. Your wiki, it gets out there. Believe me. If you're a guy who's 22, there's nothing to be ashamed of. If you're a guy who's 23, then there start to be questions about why doesn't your grown man strength, you know, match up with your age kind of thing, and how much development do you really have left? So Booker, that was a concern for me, and I don't know for sure about that. The other concern I had, and this is probably more serious, is that he had 8 sacks among just 37 pressures last year. So 1 every 4.6. That's a danger drop there. The 8 sacks is good, no problem about it. But the 1 every 4.6 pressures, the 37 pressures overall, is not particularly good. Now, he didn't play a ton of snaps, so maybe I'm being too harsh on him from that perspective. His athletic profile is not bad. He's a slightly under a 4.8 guy in the 40. It's not super impressive, but it's also not bad. Did not bench. Why?
I mean, he's a long guy. It's like, you know, speaking of the former power.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, speaking of the former powerlifter, man, like the guys with the shorter arms definitely has more of an advantage. That's why you always see the guards and the interior defensive linemen busting out like 30 something reps, and you'll see a guy who's like, "Oh man, you're a well built guy. Why can't you do more reps?" Well, he has like a 7 foot wingspan, and it's kind of harder to get all that weight going.
Is it? You know, you have a weightlifting background, so that's good. So I want to talk to you about this specifically.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary. You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
The little snippet I get from people who have a weightlifting background is that it's more total length to raise the bar, which seems to me like it's only half of the problem. I understand it is more total distance that you have to raise that bar. And you know, it's almost doing like a girl's push up off your knees sometimes to do, you know, to have to lift the bar of, you know, a smaller distance. But there's something else going on here too. I think there's something about the angular force necessary to lift it when your lever is longer effectively. Now, long lever helps you lift more things, but go ahead.
So it depends on your grip too. So like a lot of people, like when they learn how to bench, like so there's like on your standard bench bar, there's, if you want to do the wider grip, which is for taller people, they have those little things where you can measure up either your pinky or your ring finger so you can match those up and then rep it out there. What a lot of people do when they learn how to bench is they use the tighter grip. But when you're a taller person with longer arms, that tighter grip makes it harder for you to push that weight. So like, you'll mess around and might even dislocate your wrist trying to push all that weight, especially the heavier a weight that you lift. So that's why you see a lot of shorter arm guys. They can do the close grip and not have to worry about, you know, having wrist wraps or anything like that. When you're a taller, longer person, that's why you usually see them do the wider grips, and you see those different rings on the bench bar.
This is fascinating stuff. I'm really glad to have you on this show talking specifically about bench, but let me ask one more question. When you do an individual bench rep, am I correct that the start of the rep is harder than the finish of the rep, meaning the first one quarter of the distance you have to raise the bar is harder than the last one quarter of the distance you have to raise it to lock out, and not the lockout itself. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Because that's where your strength is really tested. That's why when you see guys who are repping out the bench press at the combine, you'll see them. They won't struggle on the way up, because once you get it past that certain threshold there, like once your arms are like away from like 45 degrees, like once that acute angle is kind of turns obtuse, you're golden. But like just getting it from you know, like from acute to obtuse, that's where the struggle is. And once you get that up, that's when you see guys fail on the bench press. It's not because they failed down here. They just can't get it up anymore. It's not because they can't walk out. Once you get it past that angle and you can walk out, you're good.
All right. Very good. So Austin Booker, you have at number 9. I had off my list, but I really appreciate the discussion of that. We'll go on to my number 9 guy then, I guess, because we haven't talked about him yet. And that is Marshawn Neyland of Western Michigan. So in some ways, I'm buying some of the Kool-Aid. And for him, all I've looked at is highlights. But I want to go through a few of the things. And there are definitely some of the metrics that really stand out about him. So 6'3", 267, 34.5-inch arms. That's great. Exactly what you want in terms of length. It's outstanding size. For an end team. Some people may even say he has to play 4-3 end. He really wouldn't be able to play 3-4 end, which that's another concern. I think he'd be fine as a rush linebacker. And if you think about Terrell Suggs, this is, you know, his approximate build we're talking about there. Mm-hmm. He was about 6'4", 265. Testing absolutely outstanding for his size. So 4.74, 40, 7.02 three cone at that kind of size. Yeah, baby. That's really good. Great jumps. Give away the explosiveness before you have to see it. Really physical player. Now, a guy like that with that kind of size is also a kick inside guy automatically. He's big enough that you can do that, as long as you're not disadvantaging him in terms of how he can look. But I think, you know, more like a Pernell McPhee, he might be a good first step player that could turn two sets of shoulders when he crosses a face, you know, cross the face of the guard, cross the face of the center, whatever you might do. But definitely a player who could provide you value, drive your pass rush potentially from the inside on third down. Very unpolished as a pass rusher. Now, that's a good thing on two levels. The first is he's playing at Western Michigan, so he hasn't had a whole lot of really high-level competition at that level. He's playing in the MAC. But also leaves room for growth. And you don't want to have a guy who was a hyper-productive, polished guy, because it leaves you kind of wondering, you know, where the ceiling is, as we mentioned earlier. Chuck Smith would work wonders with this guy. Definitely you, very noticeable. And, you know, I try not to get too excited about it, because you watch him and he's really just screwing with those tackles in the MAC. They're not quick enough for him. They're not a lot of things for him. They're not big enough. They're not powerful enough to deal with him. And he's just a man among boys, frankly, in a league like that. Kind of wish he'd played a year in a Power Five school to finish up. And, you know, it just didn't happen. But anyway, maybe a little bit of a stretch for me to have him at number nine. Did you have him on your list at all?
Yeah, I got him at I got him at, like, I think number eight. He's a guy that I'm really high on for many of the same reasons that you had said. And I, you know, it's funny that you said that you wish you would have went to Power Five. That's exactly what his former teammate
really?
Fisk from Florida
Braden
State.
Fisk, sure.
Braden Fisk, yeah. They were teammates together at Western Michigan the previous year in 2022, and Braden Fisk was able to translate that high level production from the MAC to the ACC. And I would have liked to have seen Marshawn Neely do the same thing too. But both guys were down at the Senior Bowl and were tearing it up. I like to watch a lot of those Senior Bowl reps. You can find a lot of them on YouTube. And Marshawn Neely was killing it against Power Five guys, both in the week of practice and during the game. So he's a guy that I'm really high on. I've seen him compared to Za'Darius Smith, and I like that comp. And I feel like he's gonna, like, the more coaching he gets, I just feel like having Chuck Smith is such an incredible asset for the Ravens, because for so many years you had guys like Aaron Donald and Von Miller going to this guy as a private pass rush guru for the Ravens to have this guy in house. I mean, even though they're, you know, the CBA stipulates that they can't spend as much time with these guys coaching them up as, you know, they used to back in the day, but there's nothing stopping from giving from your coaches giving you some tips or giving you some homework to work on, or like referring you to one of his
guru. Sure.
Yeah, to a fellow guru or one of his disciples that do that kind of stuff now. So I think having Chuck Smith is going to be a tremendous asset for any pass edge rusher, both or interior pass rusher that comes through this organization for as long as he's here.
We talk about this a fair amount on the show, but position coaches are just worth their weight in gold right now, because it's one of the few ways you can really get around the cap is by getting these guys who are at the top. And you would be foolish not to do it. I think Harbaugh has done an excellent job of bringing in position coaches and coordinators who've been very good. I mean, the Ravens he has not done as well on offensive coordinators as he's done on defensive coordinators. Defensive coordinators, he's basically never missed. With the offensive coordinators, he's missed a few times. You know, Trestman and
people like Marty Morningwig.
Well, you know, even Marty, it wasn't perfect. And I didn't like Marty at the podium because he couldn't put together a full sentence. So that was kind of annoying, and he wouldn't answer your question. He'd suddenly trail off into something else. And I don't know if you've seen this. We're a little off topic here, but did you happen to see Marshawn Lynch's movie debut? It's in a film called Bottoms.
Bottoms, yeah, I've seen it. Yeah, okay.
I find him to be absolutely hilarious in that. Marty Morningwig was, like, similarly unintentionally hilarious, but going through this stream of consciousness, no sentence ever ends kind of thing when he's at the podium. Just, you know, really a legitimately funny interviewee, but also kind of frustrating in that way that he kind of never has a question he's answering.
Yeah, yeah. When you have, when I come against come across coaches like that as a full time sports reporter, you kind of like, it's kind of the one of the beauties of working in print. You can kind of piecemeal different quotes together. So like you have blah 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 blah. Morningwick said, or you can use dot dot dot, or you can just back have the first part of one quote and then said, and then have the second part of the quote a different quote, and make it seem like it's one quote. And but it's like you kind of force him to have a coherent thought without him having a coherent thought.
Yeah, they, you know, there were rules in journalism when I learned it way back when that you were allowed to kind of correct the language when he said something wrong. You were like, but I guess now they want you to do even more in order to parenthetically say what he said and what he really meant. A lot of the times, so it's probably harder now given.
Yeah, you got to put the blocks, not the parentheses, but like those kind of, the brackets. Yeah, here we go.
Yeah, good stuff. Good stuff. So anyway, okay, you got Marshawn Nylan. Happy to hear it. So let's see. Now, where are we? Your number eight guy was Marshawn Nylan, right?
Correct.
So we're back to my number eight guy, who is Jonah Ellis of Utah. Be interested to hear where you have him. So 6'2", 246. Here's the big thing with Ellis, and the reason why I absolutely love him. Comes from a football family, for starters, by the way. He's got, 11? You know, he's got his father, Luther Ellis, who played in the NFL, and then three brothers who all have some amount of NFL experience. I don't know if they've actually played in the NFL, or they've been on practice squads, or they've been in camps or whatever, but three brothers who played. He will turn 21 on April 3rd. We're recording this on April 1st. He won't be 21 for two more days. By far the youngest guy in the edge class that I'm aware of. I could have missed somebody. There could be somebody in a lower round that I don't know about. Most of the guys would be high-end guys like Ellis, who would be that. He really does not display grown man strength from that. A guy, you're going to need time in an NFL weight room, but that's okay. He does have a polished set of pass moves. He's probably the one guy I like a lot who's already pretty polished, because I think he got it the right way by being a lifer family. I think those traits in terms of what work ethic he brings to camp, what work ethic he brings to the team will really carry over from his family in a very positive way. So it's okay that he probably learned some pass rush moves from the Thanksgiving Day touch game, no problem from that. But anyway, one of the other things that I saw cited was his bend, which I don't really honestly believe to be all that impressive. It's a little bit overrated, honestly, in my opinion. But I'd like to hear your thoughts on that as well. He's a situational pass rusher at the start, not a guy you want in there against the run. Talk about your feelings about him before we move on. Talk about predict where he might be drafted.
Yeah, I definitely think he's going to be – he could go as high as like late round two. I've seen him in some mocks, but I think he's a solid third to fourth round pick. He was my first on my honorable mentions. I just had him just outside my top 10 just because of his lack of size. I mean, he's really – really on the smaller side as far as weight goes. I mean, his height is solid, what, 6'3" or something like that. But like I said, his lack of size and the fact that he'd come in and immediately just be a situational pass rusher, where I feel like as the Ravens kind of need somebody who's going to play a little bit more and not just come in on obvious passing downs. So that's the only reason, the only two main reasons I didn't have him in my top 10. But other than that, I love the guy's motor. I love his raised pass rush moves. I know he didn't have his big breakout year into this past season, but 12 sacks. It's 12 sacks, man.
Yeah. Let's talk about the one comment you made there, because I think I take the other side of this argument. The Ravens have got a pair of guys that they've been using in this situational method on first down to play in their base defense. Now, admittedly, I don't think that's ideal. I think they'd probably rather not play one of those guys, maybe even not have Tavius Robinson active if they didn't need to. In the situation, so you could bring in another defender who can play the run for that. But I mean, to me, it's situational pass rusher is exactly what this team needs. It's exactly their need. And situational pass rusher slash Sam, I'd go that far. But I'm all about getting guys with real pass rush chaps out of this draft. So I just want to say that because I kind of aligned my list that way.
Yeah, it's not that I don't think that they don't like need it. I think like they couldn't use one. It's just as far as like just given the way that the roster looks right now and the certainty around Ojabo, I was like, I really want them to come out of here with a potential starter, like a full-time starter at edge with one of their top three picks in this draft.
All right, fantastic. So where did you have it's an honorable mention. You said that already. Okay, so I had Jonah Ellis at number 8. Who's your number 7 guy?
My number 7 guy is Mo Kamara from Colorado State University. He's a guy who, like, you know, is undersized, highly productive in college. You know, he's a disruptor, you know, team captain, all that. I think he got like 13 and a half sacks this past season. And he's a guy who, like, kind of reminds me of a guy, former CSU Ram in Shaq Barrett, you know, a kind of undersized guy. And when you get those guys who are undersized, they also have a great better leverage on some of these tackles, you know. So you have the guys who can kind of get under the pads of these tackles, you know, really kind of forklift them up. And he tested off the charts too at the combine. He tested extremely well. Was very productive, consistently productive in college. When you look at his resume, I mean, I think he got Defensive Player of the Year for whatever conference he was in. I forget it now, but yeah, he's a guy that I'm really, really high on, and I see him going anywhere between the third and the fourth round, and he could be a guy who could be a situation pass rusher right off the back for you.
Okay, I don't disagree with that. I think that's where he is. He certainly has a pretty good base of pressures with 13 sacks, 12 hits, and 38 other hurries as a senior. So that's still, it's 13 out of 62. It's at that worrisome number. I mean, it's a great overall number of sacks. It's just a high percentage of conversions on his pressures. Now, anytime you have 13 sacks, you're probably going to have a pretty high conversion rate on your pressure, because it's hard to rack up 75, 80 pressures in a season to, you know, make that base look about where it should be at maybe 1 every 6 or thereabout. He definitely is a disruptive player. He's in the backfield a lot and making things happen. I had some things, I had a couple of things I didn't like about him. Number one is he seems to be pretty much a bull rush guy. And Suggs had this, and we've had other guys like Away who've been a little bit slow on the get off, who convert to bull rush very quickly because of it, don't really have a great set of moves. Now, Chuck Smith could be the answer for that. Or it could be a case where the desire to continue going with the bull rush leaves him in a position where he's not drawing as many holding penalties in particular as he should. This is a guy at 6'1", 248, who should be living necktied by offensive tackles. He should be basically forcing offensive tackles with a dip move to basically get him by his neck and the crook of the elbow. It's the easiest way to get a holding call if you're an edge rusher in the NFL. And James Harrison,
throw your hands up. Yep.
Yeah. James Harrison, you know, lived on it. And, you know, really, there might have to be a special guard that those guys should wear around their neck, but they're really looking for the offensive tackle to be contacting their Adam's apple on a regular basis to get that holding call. Anyway, I had him off of my list, and I didn't have him as an honorable mention, but in my notes, I said I'd be happy if they draft him on day 3. To me, I think he's like a round 5 guy for the Ravens, probably. I'm not as excited about him as I wouldn't be excited at all if he went in the third round. Honestly, I think the guy's just, he's not, you know, where you'd want a third round pass rusher to be. If they got him in the fourth round, I wouldn't be upset, but I wouldn't be really excited either that the Ravens are getting a value selection out of it.
Yeah. I mean, like I've just seen him mocked as high as, like, I'll look at it a bunch of like seven round mocks just to kind of see where the consensus is as far as where guys are projected to go. Because you never just want to read somebody's scouting report and say, oh yeah, this guy's going to be a second round pick. I'd rather gather some sort of consensus. Like I'll do extensive looks on multi round drafts. I like looking at a guy like Chad Reuter, writer from NFL.com, and some of the Pro Football Network guys too, and the Draft Network guys when they do their seventh round, four round mocks. And I've seen them as high as the third, and but a lot of them have them in between the fourth and fifth round, like you were saying.
And I will say this, that whenever you talk about an individual player dropping in a round, I get a lot of buzz. Well, he'll never be available then. Well, some players are going to be available then. Some players are going to drop into the Ravens value range. And you know, you look back and a couple of years ago it was Travis Jones. Right. Mm-hmm. Did that work out for the Ravens? Yes. And you know, it's a matter of which guy falls into your range. So I'm giving you the round. I'm excited getting the guy in. And you know, Travis Jones drops there. Matabike drops to 71. You get excited about that kind of value. And, you know, there are going to be other guys that don't make it. Many others that don't make it to the point where it's a value pick for the Ravens, but that's okay. You're still going to be somebody left on your draftable board.
How many times do we got to sit there and watch the draft and then watch guys like Mel Kiper and Daniel Jeremiah lament about, I can't believe this guy is still on the board. If this team doesn't take this guy here, I don't know what they're thinking. And that guy who was projected to be a second round pick. I mean, remember when Farley was coming out, people were projecting to be as high as the first round, locked to be in the second. This guy fell all the way to the fourth round. And then when the Ravens scooped him up in the fourth round, oh, the Ravens winning the draft again. You know, perfect value pick and all this kind of stuff. It's because the guy's projected to go, you know, as high as number one, doesn't mean if he falls number four that he's a bust. That just means that different teams have this guy different charted at different places, and they place higher values on different positions and different prospects. Just because the guy might be 100 on somebody's board doesn't mean he's going to be a 50 on somebody else's board.
All right. Okay. So that was your number seven guy you just did, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll go to my number seven, who is Darius Robinson of Missouri. You know, maybe a little bit of a polarizing player. Not everybody's going to have him super high on their boards, but I put him there. This is not Chop Robinson. This is Darius Robinson of Missouri. He probably kicks inside to play a five, but he's the one guy I left here who is a potential edge who could also be a kick inside. 34.5-inch arm, 6'5", 296. Still has a good vertical. I'm not at all concerned, by the way, about his 21 bench reps, because at 34.5-inch arms, that's a hell of a number. You know, it's better than 25, 26 bench reps if you have short arms. So it's just maybe that's how I look at it anyway. You could maybe give your what's your conversion rate on that?
So I don't have a figure, but I definitely anybody who has long arms that does more than 20 reps. That dude is he's strongest. He's country strong. He's strong as hell, because it's hard to do that with those long of arms. Any guy that can do more than 20 reps with 31 plus inch arms. That dude's a beast.
Okay. All right. Let's see. One of the things you'll see if you watch Darius Robinson is he has a push pull move, and in his size, that's a push pull move is often you need real strength to execute that. And it's something that you'll often see defensive tackles do. And John Simpson in particular fell prey to that a lot this last year. He ends up on the ground a high percentage of the time, because you get a guy lunging even just a little bit and you pull him down to the ground, you're by him. And you don't even have to get him all the way to the ground. But oftentimes in Simpson's case, he was actually on the ground. Ravens had some problems with that with other players who couldn't keep their feet. Bozeman had if you're looking for a weakness of Bradley Bozeman, it's probably keeping his feet was the biggest thing. When he was starting out, Matt Skura occasionally had trouble keeping his feet. Some guys who ended up being pretty decent linemen, but this is one thing you love to see, one specialized move that's kind of a not atypical edge move, I'll say, and it's the push pull. You see that really dictates first contact, those long arms. You know, it wasn't that he was a bad run defender, but he's definitely one of the players you'll see who converted from a run defender to a pass rusher, which is typical. Your best defensive players, they want them on the field on the high leverage downs. They play more passing snaps as they go through their career, and that's certainly him. He did have a decent number of total pressures, but a good number of finishes. So that's one thing I'd look for. Since he's at 6'5", 296, I would expect him to have a missed tackle rate that looks more like an interior defensive lineman than an edge. And edges, they tend to pile up a little higher missed tackle rates, not huge or anything. They still got to be down 10, 11% if you really want to consider them good at all. He's at, let's see, it was bad, 19.4% in 2023. But it was based on just seven misses. And in his previous years of his career, he was better as a missed tackle guy. By the way, there's just some things that you have to look only at the numbers. You can't just look at film for, because no one is going to put together all the missed tackles for a player into one neat film, or all the drops for a receiver into one neat film. So you can put them together and see, hey, what do these have in common that I can see? Are these focus drops? Are these whatever? And, you know, you even watch four games for a receiver, you'd probably be lucky if you see two drops. Unless you're specifically focusing on games where you have drops.
I don't know, Ken. If you go on Twitter, there are some people out there, some trolls out there that will spend a copious amount of time putting together a highlight reel of receivers' drops. But it's usually particular receivers. Like, you got the Quentin Johnston from the Chargers, Kadarius Toney, pretty much all the Chiefs receivers from last year. they have a low light reel out there, several low light reels out there. But going back to Robinson, he's a guy that I really like. I actually had him. I have him on my list a little bit higher than you. I actually have him right behind Chop Robinson. At he's my Darius Robinson is my fifth. Chop is my fourth. Spoiler alert. But guy like Darius, he's just like I said. Last year was actually his first year playing on the edge. I remember reading that, you know, he was interior defensive lineman up until last year. And then he had his best year to date from a sack production standpoint. As an edge rusher, then he went to the Senior Bowl, dominated there, had a pretty solid showing at the combine for somebody of his size dimensions. The almost 300 pounds and with his arm length and like the nice vertical jump, and you know he didn't run a blazing 40, but at almost 300 pounds running a sub five is still solid.
Yeah,
so he's a guy that I really like, and that, you know, I've seen projected to the Ravens in several mocks in the first round. Like I said, I don't know about
in using, the first you know, round.
Yeah, I don't know about using 30 overall on him. I'd much rather them, you know, like take a tackle with that spot, yeah. Whether it's an immediate starter at right tackle or future starter at left tackle who can play guard, I'd be fine with that. But a guy like Darius Robinson, I'd love for them to scoop up in the second or third.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would too. And I think, you know, he runs the risk of being a guy that is kind of a tweener that nobody really believes can play a 4-3 edge or certainly an outside linebacker role. And so, you know, then he still has value to a team like the Ravens if they want to use an interior kick inside specialized pass rusher, because that's he can do that in spades. But the question would be, do the Ravens really need that anymore? Because you only have two interior defensive linemen or one or zero on passing downs. And the Ravens have a three pack to choose from that are very good on the interior. All of Pierce, Jones, and of course, Matabike adds something to the pass rush from the inside. I just don't see them keeping two of those guys off to put in an extra outside linebacker on the inside, where, you know, you're usually giving something up a little bit size wise anyway to move that guy inside.
Yeah. So the two things on that, I definitely feel like, you know, the rise of a guy like Darius Smith and Pernell McPhee definitely helped guys like Darius Robinson kind of find a place in this league. And also at the fact that they like to use Matabike on the edge sometimes could, you know, still create a pathway for a guy like Darius Robinson to come on the field on those possessions. Just because, like, you could have Darius Robinson on the edge, or you could have Justin Matabike on the edge. You could have, you know, Darius Robinson playing the three. You could have Justin Matabike playing the three. You know, it really depends on what kind of package you want out there.
And that opens up a lot of different stunt games if you're going to do that, especially if those two are your three and your seven, or if they're on the same side. All right. Anything else to say about him? Yeah. Another guy. If I really combed through this a second time, I'd probably say Darius Robinson's going to end up a five tech, and I pretty maybe should have just excluded him, but he's a very fun player to watch. And
yeah, definitely. He tore it up at the Senior Bowl.
All right. So you had him at number five, you said?
Yep.
Okay. And your number six guy?
My number six was Braylon Trice. He was,
okay.
I liked him a lot.
And my number six was Adisa Isaac. So we're done with the 10 through six countdown here. Josh and I'll come back and we'll do the second part of this, and you'll be able to do this on a second download. I don't like putting out a 2-hour show there because people become intimidated by it and they won't do it. But 2 1-hour shows is, you know, maybe two car rides for some people, and it's a little easier to deal with. Josh, always great talking football with you. Tell us where people can talk football with you online.
Yeah, you can always talk to me online on Twitter at JoshReed907. There's also comment sections on our articles over at Baltimore Beatdown where I sometimes engage with readers there as well.
All right, outstanding. And reporter out in Anchorage, we're interested in, like, vicariously following your career, but congratulations on breaking into the business and doing as well as you are, man.
I appreciate it, man.
All right, other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, we've got a number of different opportunities. If you have something about the draft, hit me up quickly. It has to really go before the draft. If it's a post-draft analysis thing, that would also be okay to go afterwards. But we're also doing, of course, the Recollection Series this offseason. If you have a particular Ravens player you'd like to talk about, just DM me. They're always open and lock that player up while the lock-in's good. So Jarrett Johnson, about five different people requested him, for example. And so there wasn't the opportunity to give everybody, to let everybody do him, and people had to take other players. So get your name in quickly. Josh, thanks again for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and Watch or Tap, also on them.
Service plan required for Watch or Tap. Trade in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.